radiophonique mobile, and it is 5 p.m. in here, here in Paris.
Vous avez l'air bien pressé ce matin.
Je dois m'habiller, je vais sortir.
Vous allez où ?
De l'autre côté commence le pays de ceux que l'on ne nomme pas.
Quand reviendrez-vous ?
Ce sera vite fait.
Il y a de belles personnes qui ont dû être bien heureuses de vous.
Qu'est-ce que vous voulez dire ?
Un de ces êtres qui reviennent de l'inconnu pour nous délivrer des messages.
Session number one at Lafayette Anticipation, and today we're talking on the radio about radio. So let's open the session with a piece by Melissa Dubin and Aaron Davidson. It's called You Love Me Truly, and we listen now to Melissa Dubin reading a text about it.
Our studio is located in the Brooklyn Navy Yard. Decommissioned in 1966, the yard is now a modern industrial park. Each day we pass the defunct radio transmission towers of the 3rd Naval District's U.S. Communications Center headquarters, which stand above the old Material Science Laboratory. When active, the transmissions reached submarines under shallow waters and went as far as Puerto Rico. In researching the history of these radio towers, we discovered that the first song ever sung live over radio waves was transmitted in 1907 from inventor Lee DeForest's lab in Manhattan to the USS Dolphin, docked in the Brooklyn Navy Yard. The singing was heard by 19-year-old Oliver Wyckoff during a test of the ship's new radio telephone. What he heard during that test was opera singer Ada Eugenia von Busse-Ferrar's voice singing I Love You Truly, a popular song written by Carrie Jacobs Bond in 1901. All accounts indicate the singing was a surprise and that Oliver thought he was hearing the voice of an angel. 101 years after this first transmission, we staged a performance and radio broadcast of the song I Love You Truly from the Brooklyn Navy Yard. We invited singer George Positive to our studio to perform, and we transmitted the song from its original point of reception. A recording of this moment was made for an exhibition and album of radio-themed sound works. Later that year, we unexpectedly discovered that Eugenia's ashes were in the archives at the Brooklyn Navy Yard, the result of no known family relations when she died in 1966. Eugenia's ashes were entrusted to the DeForest Pioneers and given to Oliver Wyckoff, who heard Eugenia's voice that day. He kept them until his death, and later family members gave her ashes to the archives. In 2010, Brooklyn's Greenwood Cemetery contacted the Navy Yard archivist with hopes of interring Eugenia and giving her ashes a permanent home. We were asked to participate in a ceremony and perform the song. It became clear an urn was needed, as her ashes were still in the metal container from 1966. It has been hypothesized that inadvertent audio recordings were created during the making of ancient pottery, and using modern technology, one could make them audible. We made a device to record Eugenia's voice singing I Love You Truly onto the exterior of an unfired porcelain urn, wrapping her in her own voice. A ceremony took place on October 7, 2010. Eugenia's ashes were placed within the urn, and a eulogy was read before Molly Sturgis and Melissa Dubbins, saying, "I love you truly," 103 years after Eugenia made her famous broadcast. "Here goes something into nothing," she used to have said before she sang.
"I love you truly, truly, dear. Life with its sorrow, fades into dreams when I feel you are near. For I love you truly, truly, dear. Tis something to feel your kind hand. Ah, yes, tis something by your side to stand. Gone is the sorrow. Doubt and fear. For you love me truly, truly, dear.
Today we have the pleasure to welcome from left to right Tom Rowe, Iko Rowe, and Galen Joseph Hunter. Did I say it right?
You did. Thank you.
Thank
Echo,
you.
Did he say your name correctly?
Yes.
Me too.
Okay, so everything is fine for now. So you come almost directly from upstate New York, where you run a project called Wave Farm / WGXC. We'll know more about it very soon. I say almost directly because you spent the last days in Halle in Germany performing at Radio Revolten. I don't know if I say it right again, which is an international radio art festival. So how was it?
It was good.
Echo had her international debut.
So what did you do there?
It's a month-long conference about radio art in all forms and with installations, performances, broadcasts on AM and FM. The only remaining AM transmitter in Germany is broadcasting the Radio Revolten Festival all month. We did a little performance. We met with the folks from the Radia Network. It's a network of, I think, 25 stations around the world that are interested in radio art, and we all take turns making programs for each other. And this was the first time, we didn't all meet, but many of us met since 2005, I think, was the last time the group got together. It's folks from as far off as New Zealand mostly European, but there's New Zealand, Israel, there's a couple Canadian stations, and over in the United States, we are the Radia members. Representatives.
Okay. So you are Radia members now?
We've been involved, I think, since 2006.
Okay.
And the group formed in 2005, I believe.
And
but we're the lone U.S. member at present, yeah.
Well, and do you know if the Radia is related to this futurist manifesto?
That's where they got the name, yes.
Okay. And did you read this manifesto?
We have.
And we have had folks read it on the air, too.
Yes.
Yeah? Yeah. The Marionetti Manifesto, yeah.
And could you maybe say a few words? Do you remember what it says?
If I were clever, I could even...
play Max's... or is it Max? Or
no, it's the actor whose name escapes me right now. Let's see, I can think of it in a second.
Yes.
He's married to Claire Danes.
Yes. Hugh Dancy.
Hugh Dancy, yes.
Yes, Hugh Dancy read Marinetti's La Radia for us at an early fundraiser for our FM radio station. So
we might be able to find it. Let's search.
You know, it's the audio files combined with the Alison Knowles... and Max as well. So maybe we'll get that together in a bit.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So maybe we can hear this manifesto a bit later. Because I didn't say, but you both have a computer in front of you, so you're going to play a lot of things. A lot of things coming from, I don't know where, but probably from your activity as a radio in upstate New York. But before telling this story of Wave Farm and stuff, we could go back in time just a little bit with something called Free 103.9, maybe. And that could connect with what we heard at the beginning, because I think Melissa and Aaron produced this piece. It was connected with you at that point.
It was. I'll just to reflect back on that piece quickly before we go to the origins. The piece we heard at the beginning of this program was commissioned as part of a collaboration with Radio Web MACPA, which is a radiophonic project of the Museum de Contemporary Art in Barcelona. And it was just on the heels of our 10th anniversary that we produced this CD, which was the third in a series of inviting artists to make short works with, for, or about radio.
And we may hear some more later.
Yeah.
Okay.
But in terms of the very, very beginnings of the Free 103.9 story, I think I'll have to turn it to Tom, who was there in the beginning, because I was not.
Yes. Even before that, I'll start very, very briefly that I was involved in a radio project called 87X in Tampa, Florida, in 1994-95. And that was in a neighborhood... where there were many artists working and living, and then
void for nearly 75,000 people in Columbia and Greene counties. Greene County legislator Bill Lawrence says the area used to have a commercial radio station that actually reported local news.
Back when I first became a legislator in the early 80s, we had great reporting, investigative reporting, actually, and I thought they did a good job of doing both sides of a story. We lost it. They went regional, and we sort of lost that local input.
Long story short, San Antonio-based Clear Channel Communications bought the station and cut local programming. Lawrence has volunteered as a co-host of the new station's morning show. And in case you're thinking he's some kind of crunchy, touchy-feely hippie, he's a Republican. WGXC's general manager, Galen Joseph Hunter, is not. And she says that's the point.
He and I couldn't disagree more politically, but he approaches his point of view with respect for others and with humor, and hopefully everyone on the station will have those qualities.
Joseph Hunter admits that perfect bipartisan cooperation on the air may be a bit of a utopian dream. But the idea that neighbors can get along if they're all on the air together is at the heart of the push for more community radio in the U.S. Activists have been asking for more licenses for community stations for more than a decade. And just as WGXC has supporters from across the political spectrum, the nationwide movement has support from liberals and conservatives. Michelle Combs is senior spokesperson for the Christian Coalition.
I think that this is really a family issue. It's affecting a lot of good churches and a lot of good schools out there, and a lot of people who this is how they get their news and this is how they get their information.
Supporters on the left tend to cite what news stations could do for immigrants or underprivileged inner city communities. Advocates on all sides of the political spectrum see community radio as an antidote to media industry consolidation.
That level of consolidation yields a lot of clout.
Democratic Senator Maria Cantwell of Washington is co-sponsor of a bill that would let as many as 1,000 new community stations go on the air. But it's stuck. It passed the House with bipartisan support, and her co-sponsor in the Senate is Arizona Republican John McCain. But a couple of anonymous senators have used parliamentary procedure to effectively veto its chances for an up or down vote. Cantwell says it's yet another example of minority rule on Capitol Hill, which happens to lots of bills that have bipartisan support.
A lot of these bills would pass 98-2 or, 95-5 if we got rid of what are called secret holds, where one or two members hold something up really on behalf of some special interest.
The special interest in this case is the National Association of Broadcasters, the trade group for commercial radio. It's been opposing an increase in the number of community stations for more than a decade. An NAB spokesperson declined to comment on whether the group was behind the secret holds in the Senate. He did say that the NAB's worried that hundreds of new stations might cause interference with the signals of existing stations. Cantwell says rigorous testing has shown that the trade group's objections are unwarranted. Besides, she says, the need for the new stations outweighs the concerns of broadcasting conglomerates.
What my constituents, and I think many Americans, want to see is a diversity of voices and an array of information being distributed from radio stations that can have a very, very unique perspective.
Supporters of WGXC in Hudson, New York, say that's what they want from their community radio station.
10, 9,
after they built the station's studio, they counted down to the moment when it hit the airwaves.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
And zero.
And zero, yeah. That countdown always gets me. It makes me want to cry a little bit. So we somehow pulled it off and have this wild mix of a station that's on the air.
And it helps that the community side hears the transmission art side. And the community programmers, because they hear the transmission art side, I think they become more considerate of trying to do an artistic job, not just do what the other stations do and try to find a different kind of way to do community radio.
Yeah. And there's kind of these, in some ways, the most magical and obvious moments where those two ideas converge is with our youth programming, I think, because the younger people are even more apt to be experimental and free, And since we have a young person sitting here with us, maybe we can talk a little bit about that. We
could. Yeah, I was going to ask, because you came to Hudson, you were 2, and now you are 3. That's it.
It's true. Echo very much has grown up with this idea of this radio station. In fact, the first real meeting we had about the station was on the day she was going to be born, but she was a couple days late, which worked out well for the meeting. Right, Echo?
Yes.
And Echo has been doing her own show on the radio for the past 2 years, and she was 7 or so, right?
Yes.
So what's your show, Echo?
Echo System.
What was it called first?
Radio Camp.
And tell us about your show.
I usually invite friends, and we listen to music and talk and learn about radio.
Yeah.
Which kind of music are you listening to?
Usually like pop.
Yeah.
But you usually mix it up a little bit, so it's more interesting for some of the grown-up listeners, huh?
Yeah.
she cuts it up and scratches
bit.
And puts echo and reverb on and all kinds of things, right?
Whoa. Okay.
And I used to have to do the show with her. But now I can leave the studio and Echo can run the console and the board, and she shows her friends what to do, and she knows how to do it all.
And one time I did it at my friend's house without any grown-ups.
Wow. So you can run a radio station by your own. Wow.
Echo, do you know we have that audio from where you guys all recorded about what kind of radio show people might want to do?
Yes,
I do. Do you want to introduce that at all?
Sure.
Do you remember what friends were doing it?
People from Sound Camp.
Yeah? What was Sound Camp? Maybe explain that a moment.
It was a camp where we did sound stuff.
That was an excellent explanation, Echo. So it was a group of, what was the age range? Like 7 to 14, is that right?
Pretty much.
Yeah? And you guys were doing sound-based experiments?
Yeah.
Okay. And then what happened? You went in the studio and...
Yeah.
And recorded... You just want me to play.
Yes.
She wants me to play. All right. So this is a little promo that came out of
sound
a bunch
camp.
Of kids doing a sound camp. All right. So we'll
Let's
play that.
Play.
And it's just about 50 seconds long.
Okay.
So we'll be right back.
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Interesting, boring, really, 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 really boring.
It would be about wonderful things. It would be about
chocolate pigs.
She's obsessed with pigs.
Chocolate pigs?
Awesome.
All the way down.
I turned it down. Only dogs can hear.
I turned it down. Do it.
Did you hear that?
No.
So that gives you a little sense of what's possible on this radio station we have in upstate New York here.
And do you know how many people are listening to the radio one way or another? Do you have a clue?
We guess, based on what happens during our pledge drives, that we have about 4,000 to 5,000 regular listeners out of and that's on FM, out of a potential of around 78,000. So.
Okay.
But it's hard to tell. That's part of the wonderful mystery of radio. You never know who is listening right now.
It's true.
Except maybe with the web radios, you can have some stats. I don't know.
The NSA knows who's listening.
Yeah. And when did you turn to... When did you become a web radio also?
Earlier.
That started first, yes.
I'm not sure. I keep going back trying to really find the first moment, but it was either 2001 or 2003 where we started Free 103.9 online radio. So for a long, long time, we've been doing the online thing.
So because back on time when you were talking about this FM and not just FM experiments in New York and stuff, were there some internet things at the time? I don't remember. I was too small to remember. In 1995, there were no internet was here, but you didn't
it was there wasn't an easy.
I think email took 2 days to get there. Then
there wasn't a lot of kind of DIY streaming happening, or the streaming that was happening was extremely DIY at that time. But we were among the early groups, like artist and activist groups, that were using streaming. The independent.
We kind of grew out of the independent media movement, the IMC movement at the time, and there was a little bit of that going on with the WTO protests in Seattle in 1999, and we were at the Republican National Convention protests in 2000 in Philadelphia, and and again in New York City in 2004.
Yeah.
So it started in the late 90s, let's say. Yeah. I was thinking that maybe, but it's a bit early actually, but we could play at some point at 6, it's going to be noon in New York. And at noon on WGXE, you have the news.
The local news, yeah.
The local news.
In 7 minutes, we'll go to that, yeah.
Yeah. But maybe you can tell us a bit before that, how this radio is run, the WGXE part, and then we can come back to the artist experimentation part. But
Tom's looking at me to explain how it's run. We have the largest staff we've ever had right now. So we have a staff of 8 people, 4 full-time and 4 part-time. That's for the whole organization.
Yeah.
And about 3 of those people are working just on the radio station.
The community radio side, yeah.
And with everyone, the radio part is so large that we all have our hands in it to a certain degree. But we have
100 or 150 volunteer programmers that do their own show or do their own show with somebody else or contribute segments or contribute to the news.
Yeah.
And I did these stats recently. We have 125 shows that air regularly on the station. The station's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. 80% of the content we air is produced originally for the station, so either live in the studio or being produced somewhere in the world for us. We do have on Saturdays, especially when we have a focus on transmission art and experimental sound, we have people from lots of different places that are producing shows, often monthly shows. So
we are the framework show that focuses on field recordings that comes out of England. We are Vital Weekly, the experimental music show out of Amsterdam. We are.
We used to have a show that was out of Abu Dhabi. He did that for 5 years. We have a show out of Chicago with the Radius Project.
Yeah.
One in Canada.
China and the UK.
That show they perform together. One of them is in the UK and one of them is in China, and
they use Skype
perform together. Yes. Yeah.
So it's live. I mean, it comes from Abu Dhabi, China, or whatever, but it's live on the radio. I mean,
sometimes it's pre-recorded, and sometimes it's live. And then the material that airs on the community part of the program schedule is also a mix of live and pre-recorded, but more often live than not. And those programs are all produced by people who live in the FM listening area. So it is extremely local, but very diverse. So you have all different types of music, people with political opinions from every direction. And then we also are a Pacifica affiliate, which is a national radio organization that produces a show called Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman that we air live, which some people may know of. Hmm. What did I leave out, Tom?
All the wonderful mistakes and odd things that happen on the air. We do a lot of live broadcasts from community events like fairs and libraries and farmers markets and all sorts of things. Where I think we're doing Phil Klein's On Silent Night in December. He's a Christmas show sort of that he brings up these boombox orchestra that's going to be walking through the streets of Hudson.
Your studio is mobile. You can move the studio everywhere.
Well, we have three static studios: one at Wave Farm, one in the library at the Catskill Library, Public Library, and another studio in Hudson, New York.
Yeah.
And then we also have at least one or two mobile studios that we can broadcast from different locations.
Okay.
I was thinking, kind of attached to this idea of remote broadcasts, I could play a couple of minutes. We have a few minutes before we're at the top of the hour.
We have
from
2 minutes.
One of the radio drone interstitials.
Real quick, yeah.
So this was for a 24-hour drone festival that took place at the Basilica in Hudson. So this is a piece by Anastasia Clark, which might lead us into the news.
Into the news.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's see. Here we go.
Glad you tuned in. Lots more to get to. We're going to hear something from Petra Hayden, from the Darcys, the Chemical Brothers, Carolyn Doctorow, and Brian Wilson, all mixed up.
My name is Rip Van Wagner from the lovely village of Catskill, and you're listening to WGXC, ACRA, Catskill and More, 90.7 FM.
The Catskill Public Library staff loves having the WGXC programmers broadcasting during the week from our Carnegie Room. For information about using the space for a meeting of your own, please call the library at 518-943-4230.
Underwriting support is provided by Tobacco-Free Action of Columbia and Greene Counties, working to protect children from tobacco marketing in stores. The more kids see, the more likely they are to smoke. To learn more and find out how you can help, visit www.seenenoughtobacco.org.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio Daily News and Weather Report for Tuesday, October the 11th, 2016. I'm Philip Grant. Patricia Doxey is reporting in the Daily Freeman that congressional candidates John Faso and Zephyr Teachout have announced they will debate on October the 27th at Congregational Emmanuel in Kingston. Republican Faso and Democrat Teachout are competing to fill the 19th congressional district seat currently held by Republican Chris Gibson. The debate will be the second time this month that the two have squared off in Ulster County and will be their third debate in the region. Faso has painted Teachout as a carpetbagger and a radical professor beholden to New York City. Teachout has characterized Faso as a politician turned lobbyist controlled by big money donors. The candidates will also debate on Thursday, October the 13th on WMHT-TV and on October the 24th. That debate will air on Time Warner Cable News. You can read that full story in the Daily Freeman. Jeanette Wolfberg is reporting in the Columbia paper that Bard College Early College is up and running at 11 Warren Street in Hudson. The program is sharing space with three other educational and training programs provided by the Berkshire Farm Center and Services for Youth in Canaan in the former Corrick Building, now owned by Galvin Foundation. The BARD program includes courses that allow students to earn high school and college credit simultaneously. Michael Sadowski, the program director, said the philosophy is that, and I quote, some students are ready for college work during high school, end quote. Hudson City School District officials said recruitment for the program focused on students who could be among the first in their family to graduate from college. Taking college courses gives them confidence that they can handle college, Sadowski said. This year, the program has 15 seniors from Hudson and Germantown High Schools. You can read that full story in the Columbia paper. Scott Waldman is reporting at Politico New York that there is still no state or federal plans to conduct expansive outreach in the city of Newburgh to encourage residents to get their blood levels checked and determine the level of health risk after years of drinking toxic chemicals. Public health experts say many Newburgh residents are probably unaware of the issue and need to be alerted to the fact that they have in their bloodstream a dangerous level of chemical linked to cancer and other serious health problems. The state's outreach so far includes participating in listening sessions with local officials, mailing information on exposure to PFOS to local physicians, participating in two public forums in Newburgh, and weekly calls with city officials, a Department of Health spokesman said. The outreach does not include a broader education campaign to fully inform city residents about the problem. In a city of 30,000, only 300 people have signed up for blood monitoring, according to the state. In May, Newburgh's main water source tested at twice the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's recommended safety limit for the chemical PFOS. The state paid for the installation of a filter on the city water supply and switched the municipal supply to an alternate source months ago. Nearby Stewart Air National Guard Base was declared a Superfund site by the State Department of Environmental Conservation because it is the likely source of the pollution. After months of pressure, the Cuomo administration recently released an announcement about the beginning of a blood testing program in Newburgh. If the number of people tested become too significant, the administration will call on the federal government for help, state officials say. Newburgh City Manager Michael Ciaravino said this level of response is far from the type of outreach necessary to help residents address the health challenges they face. Ciaravino wants widespread blood testing made available in addition to campaign to let people know the importance of checking their blood levels. You can read that full story at Politico New York. Greg Hudson is reporting in the Daily Mail that Greene County officials last week unveiled their $52 million jail proposal during a meeting held at Catskill High School. If constructed, the new facility would be the largest capital project in the county's history. The new county jail would be located on Plank Road off Route 9W in Coxsackie on a parcel adjacent to the Greene Correctional Facility, a medium security state prison. The 50-acre plot was deeded to the county by the state of New York. County Administrator Sean Groden said the project would be financed with a 30-year municipal bond, which translates into a debt service obligation of approximately $2.7 million per year. Gordon said with a new jail, the county would realize a savings of nearly $1 million a year, the amount which is currently paid to neighboring counties for boarding out people from Greene County. The new facility would consist of four housing pods, three for men and one for women, and each pod would house up to four dozen people. All aspects of daily life would be accommodated in the pods, eliminating the need to transport the incarcerated for meals or educational programs. Gordon said, and I quote, pod design essentially eliminates the need for a prisoner to be moved throughout the jail. He'll have his room, his meals, everything we provide will be within the pod, end quote. Groden said if the conceptual design is approved, ground could be broken by the fall of 2017, and construction would take 18 months to 2 years for completion. He said, and I quote, it's a generational decision. If we go through with this and build this new jail facility, we won't have to repeat this decision for at least 50 to 75 years, end quote. The existing Greene County Jail, located in the village of Catskill, is the oldest county lockup in the state. It has 56 beds, but only 48 are usable. Lawmakers appointed the Greene County Jail Task Force in 2014 to evaluate jail conditions, and its recommendations were presented to the full legislature last year. A public hearing on the jail proposal will be held at 6:20 p.m. on Wednesday, October the 19th, in the county office building in Catskill. You can read that full story in the Daily Mail. Debbie Mayer is reporting in the Columbia paper that Germantown Supervisor Joel Craig will present the town's preliminary 2017 budget at the first of two public workshops on Tuesday, October the 11th. The board has already reviewed department requests and made a plan for how to move forward. The town's tax cap this year is 0.6%, well below the state mandated 2% ceiling. Craig told the paper, and I quote, "I don't have the actual dollar calculation from the state yet, but as you can see, it means virtually no tax increase," end quote. The second workshop will be held October the 18th, and the public hearing is scheduled for Tuesday, October the 25th, immediately before the regular town board meeting. You can read that full story in the Columbia paper. Brian Herbert is reporting in the Daily Freeman that the Woodstock Film Festival will take place this week, offering more than 120 films. The annual event runs from October the 13th through Sunday, October the 16th, this year at venues in Woodstock, Rhinebeck, Kingston, Saugerties, and Rosendale. Myra Blonstein, the festival's executive director and co-founder, said, and I quote, "We have to give a reflective picture of where filmmaking is," end quote. In its 17th year, the festival seeks to highlight the wide range of subjects and styles used by a very diverse range of the independent film world. Blonstein said, and I quote, "You'll find very little Hollywood here," end quote. That being said, actor Alec Baldwin will be in town Thursday night for the world premiere of Blind, the story of Bill Oakland, a novelist who loses his wife and his sight in a car accident. Blonstein said, and I quote, "I'm thrilled he's coming, but I'm also thrilled young filmmakers from China are coming," end quote. The festival lineup includes a mixture of films shot all over the world and across the U.S., including the Hudson Valley. You can read that full story in the Daily Freeman. And now for the weather. The National Weather Service in Albany is predicting areas of frost before 9 a.m. Otherwise, it will be sunny with a high near 65 degrees. For Tuesday night, it will be partly cloudy with a low around 38. Forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high near 68 degrees. Wednesday night,
So we won't have the end of the weather forecast. Sorry.
But we'll have a little flute.
Yeah.
Circular flute.
Yeah, I don't know if the listener can hear the flute right now. I guess so. And that's a good way to ask, how, for example, how did you find this man? How did he get involved in the radio?
The news voice.
The news voice.
Philip
Such
Brandt,
a voice.
You want to tell?
I don't remember. Did he contact us? Or I guess he contacted
actually
us.
Actually, it was he. We met him at a music club called Club Helsinki in Hudson when we were doing a fundraising event for the radio station right around the barn raising time. And
we had many, many events, fundraisers or setting up a table on the sidewalk and telling people what community radio was or other sorts of thing. And this was one of those events.
And I think the way he tells the story is that he is a retired post office worker who is also a veteran, and he had gone back to school for broadcasting and moved to the area, not sure that he would be able to do anything broadcast related. And he happened, I think, to be at Helsinki that night, and his wife was saying, "You have to go talk to them." And he was very shy, but came up, and we were friendly enough that he ended up walking into the studio a couple days later, and the rest is history. He's been, got the voice.
He's been on the air ever since.
Yeah.
So how long, like years, years?
The station has been on the air now 5 years.
So he's been.
But before that, when we started the online community station before we got the FM signal up a few months, he was on from the very beginning.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's a treasure. We have a number of folks that have been with us since the beginning that are extraordinary people. But we also have extraordinary people who have come and been involved for a few years and then stepped down for, you know, because life got too busy. And that's something we also believe in, making sure that there's a changing landscape of content and people behind that content on the radio station, so it doesn't become the same 100 people aging year after year and never an opportunity for new voices.
And that's especially why we have a slot for young people every day from 3:30 to 4 is for young people. Yeah. And we also have a guest DJ slot every Friday night that is meant to bring new blood into the station.
Yeah. And do you have a lot of demands or people that write you emails or call, I want to do a radio program or something that you have to manage? Or?
We get a handful of applications every week. And then for the community side of the station, there is a volunteer programming committee that applications are reviewed by and sort of thought about and discussed. And then staff decides how and if those shows can fit into the program schedule.
And we always have room for more. There's either, if there's not a show slot available, you can do a guest DJ slot, or you can do a segment, or you can team up. We have a morning and afternoon show, and so there's two or three people, and we can put more on that and help fill in when people are sick or on vacation.
And then for the transmission art and experimental sound part of the program schedule, we get applications submitted to us online, and when we were talking about all those different places of origin, people can be located anywhere. Yeah. So that might be of particular interest to people who might be hearing us through Do Radio.
Yeah.
That if you have an idea and you want to propose something, please do.
That was what I had in mind, telling about the applications for the community side and then coming to the art side, because so it's a residency program, and you're also funding stuff, projects. I don't know.
The third
exactly.
side is the media arts grant program that Galen runs, yes.
But maybe first we can talk a bit about the residency, how it works, because I guess if some people are listening right now to this radio, they might be interested by this.
Sure. Yeah, so we have artists in residence at Wave Farm for 10 days at a time between June and October every year. We have an annual application deadline, which is February 1st. It's an online application, which is quite simple. And people propose a project idea that is transmission art specific.
It could be, though, a research project. Some people are working on a transmission art book or radio art book, and so they come and spend 10 days in the library looking things up and learning and so it can be anything from a special installation or a show or a research project.
You don't need to be super good in electronics to apply.
You don't. And you don't even have to be a long-time practicing, quote-unquote, transmission artist. It's an international open call for artists who are multidisciplinary in nature, but have enough of an interest in this concept of transmission that they have thought of a project which is innovative and
we like expanding
strong.
The roster of artists that if a sound artist has an idea that is radio related, we especially like them to apply, if radio art is not their 100% focus. We like, especially at the beginning, it's in Free 103.9, we brought all kinds of artists in, and they got to see the workings of a radio and how they might interact with radio in different ways.
Yeah.
And artists also don't have to have a vehicle. For example, when we have people who come from other countries, they come by plane or by train, and we help them get to Wave Farm and get supplies and all sorts of things like that.
There's a small fee involved. So
that we pay the artists, which sometimes is confusing. Sometimes we ask, we get
charging,
emails
yeah.
from artists about how much they have to pay, because I don't know if it's like that internationally, but in the U.S. there are a lot of residency programs that artists have to pay to take part in, and we very much want to provide what we can to the artists, so it's the other way around, depending on how much funding we get that year.
And we also give them airtime to mess around with on the air while they're there, so it may not be part of their project, but they can also do some live shows after midnight or on Saturdays.
Yes. And do you have a lot of musicians? I guess it's from all different fields, but If I remember well, you have a lot of musicians.
There are some. Our next resident is Quintron from New Orleans, who does sort of makes his own crazy electronics, and his latest thing is a weather warlock, he calls it, and he's installing, when he comes in a week or two, he's installing an upstate warlock, and the weather warlock is, it takes all the input from what the humidity is, and if it's raining, and if it's sunny, or if it's snowing, and turns that into sounds and music. So, and that will be available 24 hours a day. That'll be a new stream like the Pond Station stream that will be available 24 hours a day that people will be able to listen to from the website.
I'm really, really excited about that project. Yeah. And if people are curious to and want to know more, he has a weather warlock installed in his hometown of New Orleans. And I think the URL is weatherfortheblind.com, I believe. But if you Google Weather for the Blind, you'll find it. Yeah. Do you know it?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I'm excited because I'll be able to mix the weather in New Orleans with the weather in upstate New York soon.
We're going to play in a few minutes a sample of something that Estelle Nabera, which is a curator, art critic, proposed us. It's a series of interviews with community radios and art radios all over the world, and she's going to tell a bit about this. And she had this idea while working as a director at L'École du Magasin, which is a school for curators, and they had this radio project called Take You There Radio, and they included the Weather for the Blind.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's
a nice segue.
Yeah, maybe we can. I don't know what we can do. I was thinking I can play Estelle right now, but maybe we could also describe a bit more specifically the place. How does it look like? For example, you come by car to your place, so you have this road, long road, and then at some point you have to turn right, and you enter some place. Maybe you could describe it a little bit.
It's a very rural county. The local prison is the biggest employer. Prisoners sent from New York City upstate is the business of New York. So we get letters from prisoners in the prison sometimes because they listen to the radio because they don't have much else to do there, and they like it very much. So when you arrive, we're off the one main road in the county, this rural county, and just on the other side of the road is the Catskill Mountains that you can see in the distance, and every once in a while we get a bear that comes wandering down from there. About half of the property is flat and full of trees and two ponds, and then the rest is a large hill with forest, mostly pine, kind of evergreen trees. Is that a good description?
Yeah, and then you have this building, this kind of huge, quite big, quite tall construction.
Yeah, the study center. It has an enormous overhanging roof and a large deck.
Allows artists to work outside all the time, and so that often becomes the studio is out under the deck.
And then inside are the bedrooms, two bedrooms, a research library, a radio studio, and
small kitchen,
offices.
And then you have this park that looks a bit like a theme park, maybe. Like a radio park?
A radio theme park. Yeah. It's becoming, more and more installations like... why don't you describe the alternate?
Well, earlier this year, a New York-based artist, Heidi Nielsen, installed a project called Outernet Library Wave Farm Branch. I might be reversing some of those words. But the Outernet, which I knew very little about before her installation and still don't know enough about, is essentially a alternative system from the internet that's satellite-based. And so it's this collection of educational materials that is accessible via satellite. So we have this kind of pyramid-like wooden structure that has four benches, each facing a cardinal direction. And inside is a computer. And then at the top is a satellite dish that...
And once a day, a satellite comes over top of Wave Farm, and the alternate grabs as many files as they can that day. And so each day it becomes a bigger and bigger library of files. And these outernet posts are all over the world in very remote places where the internet isn't, like Antarctica or Siberia or parts of Africa. And so most of the files that are uploaded to it often are kind of DIY, how-to files, things that help people create things or make things in places where they don't have internet access. Hmm.
And so you have the pound and then the fire truck?
The fire truck, the M49 from Max Goldfarb. The Japanther's remote audio outpost is up in the woods. There's also the dead drop from...
Patrick Quinn.
So there's these dead drops in many cities around the world that are basically like USB sticks that are stuck into the side of buildings so that spies or whoever can just hold up their laptop to the USB stick and put files on or take files off anonymously without the NSA knowing about it. And so we have a tree in the woods with a USB stick sticking out of it, and you can go up and put files on it and take files off of it without the NSA knowing at Wave Farm.
And this made me think, this NSA thing, that you also have another news program on the radio, which I don't remember the title, the name, but it's related to this kind of information.
Off the Hook, probably. Yeah. Yes, it actually originates from WBAI in New York City, but it's from the hacker organization 2600, the 2600 magazine you can get around the world. Yeah. And there's hacker meetings, 2600 hacker meetings, the first Friday of every month around the world in different places. And they discuss what is going on in... computer technology and radio technology and how it's being affected by surveillance and other issues.
Okay, so maybe it's a good moment to switch to Estelle Nabera and her project La Communauté des Radiophonies. So let's play it.
So La Communauté des Radios is an article that I wrote for the art magazine, the Belgium art magazine L'Art Même, last year. And it was an invitation that was given by Christine Jamard, the chief redactor of this magazine, because she knew that... as a head of the École du Magasin last year, I had the chance to follow the project Take Your There Radio that my student did at the École du Magasin. That was a temporary radio program done by the six students, from the École du Magasin last year. And they built a studio in front of the site of the art center, and they transformed the place as a studio, but also as a space to host artists and writers, any kind of artist that was related to sound art and writing that could be turned into sound and voice writing. And I was invited for short residency programs. And among them, there was Simon Ripoll-Hurier, that is one of the initiators of the DO Radio. And from that, of course, it was great to be part of this project, being involved in the production of this project at the head, accompanying the project on a production side, but also on a content side. And it was a great opportunity for me to discover a lot about radio, but also about any kind of artist that could be involved in this kind of project. So I started to raise my curiosity, let's say. And among this curiosity, I suddenly... raised a certain sensibility towards any kind of radio project, and I learned a lot through my students. And I decided to take the advantage of this article to gather together a few experiences that I found very interesting let's say the first mobile radio by Sarah Washington and Knut Hoffmann that we were going to listen. So this mobile radio is a project that started in 2005 from a resonance radio project in London, and I'd moved in different territorial parts by gathering and inviting different people from different territories. So I was very interested by this project because I met mobile radio in the Biennale de São Paulo when they have been invited by Toby Meyer. It was already almost 6 years ago. And then it was funny because I bumped into a lot of different radio projects since the time I got to know more about radio. And last year I also worked as a production for the Performa Biennale in New York for a while. And I had the huge chance to work together with the South African collective Chimurenga. And as part of this collective, Chimurenga has a project of radio that is called Pan-African Space Station. And they built the studio in New York during the Performa Biennale. And again, it was a live radio program that was moving from a place to another, a little bit like Du is now doing, becoming live and being able to be invited by Lafayette Anticipation. And in New York, it was just great. There was suddenly a lot of people from Morocco, Nigeria, people from all over Africa living in New York or in the U.S. in general that would get the chance of this radio program to perform, to give lectures about very different topics, political, philosophical, and so on, but also to play music. And it was a great occasion for me to get to know those people and to take this invitation by LARMEM just to as a platform to interview those people that I had the chance to meet. So this is what we are going to listen. This first excerpts are from an interview I made with mobile radio, and the second one is with Neton from Chimurenga and Pan-African Space Station. Those two interviews are much longer. They are online on the radio platform. And I would like to invite you to listen to those longer interviews. But I choose some extracts so that you get a better idea of what it is and to listen to those people who engaged very, very passionately in those projects.
In 2005, we chose the name because it was possible for the first time to be able to make radio from anywhere, because technology was by then developed enough to broadcast from wherever you wanted. You just needed internet access. So mobile in that case meant moving. So going out of the traditional radio studio and bringing the production of radio onto the road, basically.
So I'm going to switch directly to one of the questions I wanted to ask you as a third question before coming to the subject of São Paulo Biennale, where I discovered your project. So more generally, what is the philosophy of your project, Mobile Radio? You've been talking a lot about artists doing radio projects, artists being involved in sound project, transmissions project. Can you tell me more about generally what is your interest and what's your philosophy of doing a project such as mobile radio?
I mean, for me, it has a very I suppose it has a very strong political basis, although it's not an overt thing. But this feeling of power you get when you take control of your own media, when you realise that not only can you get together with people and do projects, but you can actually set up your own radio station, or you can build yourself a tiny radio transmitter. Suddenly that completely changes your whole perspective of what media is and enables you to be part of the media landscape, and you start thinking very differently about everything you do. And it's been amazing in all the projects we've done. The most amazing thing is what you leave behind you, and what you leave behind is that people say, wow, we're going to start this, we're going to do this ourselves, because they really, as soon as they've done it once, they get the bug for it, and then they get the feeling. So it's this sense of empowerment. And I like the fact that it's not just a political thing. We don't go there and say, oh, you must have your own media. It's that's not the reason behind it, but that's the effect of it. And you do that through an artistic way. To me, that's what's interesting about it.
Before Chimurenga started, we started playing with the idea of radio, that if we had a sort of event that brings together the ideas and the initiatives from this place, and we broadcast them in the space itself. So what we did, shortly after we launched the market in 96, we started to have weekly sessions in a central place of the building on Friday afternoon, where we'll have music played and we'll have people reciting poems and all that. But all of this activity, because the building is a four-floor building with different people in the studio, we put speakers all over the place, right? So it became a sort of internal radio that we broadcast as an event. And increasingly, because we will have different people coming from outside to participate in this program, you will then have people coming to listen. You know, they will just come in this space on a Friday afternoon, not necessarily where we're broadcasting from, sit somewhere in the building, a studio, and listen to the program. So it was kind of a meta radio, almost like radio by a radio station, and of course playing with this. But you can only experience it on site. Chimurenga started and did his own thing as a publication, but we never gave up on this idea of arts, creativity, criticism, knowledge, history, working in duality, not only in print, but also working in a more audible, sonic, you know, realm. We called it the Pan-African Space Station for a number of reasons. First, to locate it with the history of this very specific place, the Pan-African market. Space to deal with the politics of space is a very political thing in South Africa, you know, but space in a very literal sense, as in land, specific space that black people can or cannot occupy in the city. So that too was kind of literal in implicating the politics of who can do where or who can be where. The third thing we wanted to kind of raise was this kind of almost a sort of historical blockage to connect cultural production on the continent, well, at the time, you know, cultural production on the continent with some kind of idea of futurity and exploration and experimentation, right? Of course, Afrofuturism is now a trend, everybody is talking about it, but I think at the time there was a kind of reluctance, you know, to imagine the production of culture with something that is also a projection, you know, an anticipation, a speculation. It was always a kind of reverse process, like going into this tradition, blah, blah, blah. So we wanted to intervene in this kind of conceptual space. So these are, and the fourth reason we call this space station is because the acronym then of the Pan-African Space Station is PASS. And pass also has a very important history in this country. I mean, the ID book that black people were required to carry during apartheid to move from place to place is called the passbook, you know. And this is essentially the book, like if a policeman or woman found you somewhere where you're not supposed to be, they will ask you for your passbook. And your passbook needs to show that you are in the city, and you are allowed to be in the city, if you want to work as a university worker. We also wanted to touch on that.
Okay, so back to the studio, and maybe it's time now to let Marie ask you a question. She's asking for to many people for quite a while now. So Marie, it's you.
Thank you, Sam. We also would like to ask you to talk about sound. One song that leave it mark on you and relive memory of song, a song we doesn't forget.
Sound.
A sound. Yeah. Yes.
Echoes. If you stop.
Echo. Did you understand the question?
A little.
You want us to explain some more? Is there a particular sound that has impacted you, or you really remember, or? Is your favorite sound, or a sound you hear on the radio that you'd like to mention?
Is that a correct rearticulation of it? Is that okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
My answer is static.
You like static? You like listening to static?
Well, I hear it a lot sometimes on the radio.
And do you like it or not?
It impacts me, I guess.
How so?
Does it give you a headache?
Well, when it's WGXC, it means something bad's happening, usually. Usually, sometimes it's on purpose.
And then mommy's running around trying to fix things?
Yeah.
I should follow Echo because I have a similar answer, but it isn't the static of our radio station not working, although that is an alarming static. But when Tom and I were living in New York City and would drive upstate looking for property to start Wave Farm, there was a really funny thing where the radio in our car wasn't working, and we had this small Grundig radio that was you could crank it to make it work. And so, do you remember this? And so Tom would often be driving, and I would crank the radio, and Tom always wanted to listen to see if there was any unlicensed radio. And so there was this kind of comical routine where I'd be cranking the radio, and we'd be tuning, looking for unlicensed radio. And so it was, and there was this change that happened over time where, instead of being really irritated by the static of poor reception and in-between channel sounds, I started to kind of start to enjoy it very much. And I think that was also a trajectory that followed into being really excited about the idea of transmission art and what we were building upstate.
And I'll answer the question with in a similar situation, I always ask this same question is about artists of that. When did you first start listening to the radio? How did you get interested in the radio first? And to me, that was when I was a kid about Echo's age. I would listen to baseball games with the radio under my pillow. And the station that played the baseball games also had a DJ, morning DJ, who would cut up bits of the baseball game, mix it with songs, like kind of early mashup weird thing. And I really liked that a lot. But then I also... So I would end up I would get my cassette player and do the same thing and record off the radio and mix it up and make my own static. And so I guess the theme is static. Static is a favorite of mine, and apparently everyone else here is talking about static. So I have a short 2-minute piece called Static. Maybe I could play that now.
Yeah, that's perfect.
All right. You guys ready?
Yeah.
Do you know why people hate statics usually? That's a good for example, when you listen to new radios, they always cut the statics.
I think people are just kind of trained to want to only listen to the places where the station is, and they don't explore the wonderful world in between the stations. Yeah. And we noticed we loved the static in New York City when we were based in New York City, and then we moved upstate and noticed the quality of the static was very different because there were fewer stations and more weird sounds too.
So you were not like always close to one station with a ghost of the station. You were just in the middle of.
In New York Station, City, it's more close together, the ghost zone, and in upstate, it's more spread apart, and so there's pure static in between.
Yeah. You have large deserts of statics, yeah. And maybe it's a good way to come back to the radio, because I guess in this manifesto, I don't know if he's talking about statics, but that I think he should. I mean, that's part of the thing, no?
Yeah, I don't know if there's a specific reference to the word static in the translation. Anyway, there's the reception, amplification, and transfiguration of vibrations emitted by living beings, living or dead spirits, dramas of wordless noise states. That's kind of static-like, I think.
I remember something about gathering a people of noise or something like this.
Yeah.
Maybe statics can help.
All right, so you want to hear that now?
We could play that now if you want.
Sure. This is the actor Hugh Dancy reading the Radia Manifesto.
This was recorded in June of, I think, 2012.
Where was it recorded?
This is in upstate New York in a town called Ankrum. It was a garden party for the radio station.
So it's recorded outside, so you get some sounds of crickets and birds and such, too.
Yeah.
So. All right, ready?
Let's play it.
This is Marinetti and Masnate's futurist thoughts about the radio. Marinetti was a kind of father of futurism, and it's worth mentioning, I think, in light of this reading, that he went on to become a fascist activist. La radio must not be one theater, because radio has killed the theater already, defeated by sound drama. Two, cinema, because cinema is dying. A, from rancid sentimentalism of subject matter. B, from realism that involves even certain simultaneous syntheses. C, from infinite technical complications. D, from fatal banalizing collaborationism. E, from reflected brilliance inferior to the self-emitted brilliance of radio television. 3, books. Because the book, which is guilty of having made humanity myopic, implies something heavy, strangled, stifled, fossilized, and frozen. Only the great free-word tableau shall live, the only poetry that needs to be seen. La Radia abolishes, 1, the space and stage necessary to theater, including futurist synthetic theater,
action unfolding on a fixed and constant stage, and to cinema, actions unfolding on very rapid, variable, simultaneous, and always realistic stages. 2. Time. 3. Unity of action. 4. Dramatic character. 5. The audience as self-appointed, judging, mass, systematically hostile and servile, always against the new, always retrograde. Laradia shall be 1. Freedom from all point of contact with literary and artistic tradition. Any attempt to link Laradia with tradition is grotesque. 2. A new art that begins where theatre, cinema, and narrative end. 3. The emancipation of space. The word must be recharged with all its power, hence an essential and totalitarian word, which in futurist theory is called word atmosphere. Words in freedom, children of the aesthetics of machines, contain an orchestra of noises and noise chords, realistic and abstract, which alone can aid the colored and plastic word in the lightning-fast representation of what is not seen. If he does not wish to resort to words in freedom, the radiast must express himself in that free word style which is already widespread in avant-garde novels and newspapers that typically use swift, quick, synthetic, simultaneous free word style. 13. Isolated word repetitions of verbs in the infinitive. 14. Essential art. 15. Gastronomic, amorous, gymnastic, etc. music. 16. The utilization of noises, sounds, chords, harmonies, musical or noise simultaneities of silence, all with their graduations of arpeggiatura, crescendo, and decrescendo, which will become strange brushes for painting, delimiting, and coloring the infinite darkness of Laradia by giving squareness, roundness. Spheric, in short. 17. The utilization of interference between stations and of the birth and evanescence of the sounds. 18. The delimitation and geometric construction of silence. 19. The utilization of the various resonances of voice or sound in order to give a sense of the size of the place in which the voice is uttered. The characterization of the silent as semi-silent atmosphere that surrounds and colors a given voice, sound, or noise. 20. The elimination of the concept or the illusion of an audience, which has always had, even for books, a deforming and damaging influence.
So this was La Radia, I mean, with the French accent. How do you say the radio? La Radia. And I don't know how to follow with that. You made a small intervention in the middle of it.
A little intervention there, yes.
Which was quite coherent. And so
and that was Hugh Dancy. We'll give him proper credit.
And so you're here in Paris for a few days more. What are your plans?
Well, Seth Cluett has told us about this. Let me see if I can find it here. This radio museum or this. Let's see what it's called here.
There is a radio museum here.
This. You can play the radio 50 seconds while you look for it if you want, Tom.
Oh, yes. That's a great idea.
Echo made a piece while we were in Halle at Radio Revolten, which I think is...
It's only 30 seconds.
Oh, 30 seconds. There
okay.
We go.
Ready?
Ready.
Okay.
Radio.
Radio. Radio.
Radio. Radio.
Radio.
Radio.
Radio.
Radio. Radio.
无线电. 无线电.
Radio.
Radio. Radio.
Radio.
Radio.
Radio apparato.
Radio.
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 Radiofono.
Radio.
Radio.
Utmacht.
Radio.
Radio.
And again, why the English has the best voice?
I think that's Echo can explain where that came from. We can blame the source.
Well, we just went to like Google and looked up translate and then like kept on pressing different languages.
Right.
But that was your idea, right?
Yes.
That's a great idea.
It followed the manifesto well.
So I was talking about the Docks de la Radio. Do you know, it's an old shop with old radios and radio parts, vintage speakers and more. You know
this, you have to give us the address.
And more. Speakers and
so
more.
It's just north of the 18E above the Periphérique.
Yeah. Where is it?
Just north of the 18E above the Periphérique.
Ouais, au-dessus du 18e arrondissement. Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's Clignancourt. Mm. So you have everything you want there. So I guess you can have radios too, but I never spend time there. Maybe Simon spent more time than I did. No. He's far away from the microphone, so we won't know right now, but...
he's refusing the microphone at home.
So you're going to go there, I guess.
And Echo wants to see the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah, you want to climb?
And I want to get a beret.
A what?
A beret.
A beret. A hat, a beret.
Ah, a beret, of course. A beret.
She's already had her chocolate croissant, so.
And so the Eiffel Tower is also a radio tower, so that makes sense.
It's on topic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How many antennas are on top of the Eiffel Tower?
I really don't know. But a lot of antennas. Does anyone know how many antennas on the Eiffel Tower?
Have there been any pirate broadcasts from the top of the Eiffel Tower?
Pirate, I don't know, but a lot of, in the late 90s, early 20s, a lot of tests were made from the Eiffel Towers. Yeah.
In New York, the World Trade Center used to have an artist residency program at the top.
Ah, yeah?
And the artist, Stephen Vitello, took a like a 1-watt FM transmitter and broadcast from the top of it, and it would get to 23rd Street, which is several miles. But a 1-watt transmitter travels very far if it's that high up.
Yeah. So you could try to bring.
We should bring our transmitter up on top.
Yeah, and you tell us, and we listen.
And you tune in. Yeah.
And I think we are going slowly to the end of the session. So maybe a good question right now would be, did I forget anything very important? Or do you want to say something very important?
What, like, Echo, did we forget something?
Yeah.
No.
You don't have anything to say? Okay.
You seemed like
you had something to forget.
I can't think of anything you forgot, or we forgot. Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you for coming, because it's a great luck to have you here, because you're not here quite often, so it was a perfect match in the, how do you say, in the schedule, in the calendar, in the whatever.
And we're so excited about Du Radio and happy to be here in this amazing space.
And it's just our first collaboration, but I know there will be others.
Absolutely, yes.
You have to, how do you say, you have to tune in. I'm trying to address.
Stay tuned
to these stations.
Yes.
Exactly. And so I was thinking for closing the session, maybe we could listen to another piece by Aaron Davidson and Melissa Dubin. And this piece is called Last Transmissions. And
I think you're
quite connected to this piece too. Maybe you can say a few words about it. It's better that.
This is, I think this piece was actually created for that 2005 New Museum exhibition that I talked about with the 31 Down piece. And it was an installation that had two sound works as part of it. One, recordings of last transmissions that were, the last things people said before they went off air in a variety of contexts. And the other were lost, so incorrect
phone messages being left or messages being left on the wrong machines or somehow misplaced, and there was a micro transmission in the museum as part of it as well.
Okay, so we're gonna listen to a 11 minutes sample of last transmissions, and you can also listen to it on Melissa and Aaron's website. And
I think it's on the Wave Farm archives too.
Okay, so it's everywhere. And of course, we're gonna. If you want to listen to Wave Farm, you have to go on wavefarm.org, and we're gonna put the link on the on our website as well. And before playing last transmissions, I want really to thank the technical part of the due session for tonight, Lorraine Beau and Marie Limoujou behind me.
Merci.
Merci.
Merci beaucoup. Merci. And stay tuned. We'll come back tomorrow at 7, and maybe we should announce a bit what's happening tomorrow. I don't remember what's happening tomorrow.
On se retrouve demain à 19h pour une conversation entre Ryan Tabet, Tyler Coburn et Anna Collin.
Great. À demain alors.
Go ahead, Operation Crossroads at Bikini. We are speaking to you from the island of Bikini. We think this is a rather auspicious occasion because of the fact that this is probably the first time, and no doubt the last, that a radio station will be broadcasting from Bikini. This island has been read about, been told about, and you've seen pictures of it in the papers, in magazines, and over the radio for the past several months. Now this is an actual broadcast from this location.
I guess you know that's an old Gene Austin hit song. Of course, you don't remember Gene Austin, do you? But I do. Well, I tell you the truth, I wasn't gonna be very lengthy with my goodbye, and I'm not, because for the old Duke, there's no shedding the mask. No sad singing or slow riding for me, partners. I'm gonna say goodbye to you this way. I'm gonna say thanks to you, because I honestly believe that my association with this station has matured me to the point that I am capable of taking that job in Chicago. And I'm going to succeed because you asked me to. And I'm not going to disappoint you. I'll make that promise to you right now. Thank you very much and goodbye.
J'espère que pour votre première sortie, vous n'avez pas fait d'imprudence.
Je voulais vous dire...